Good morning. Today is the 2nd of the 1st.
Yes.
Of the 20th. Joining us this morning is Humboldt County Sheriff Billy Hansel. Good morning.
Good morning, Brian. Happy New Year.
Yeah.
2020?
Yeah. Hope there's not a lot of lingering things from 19 for a lot of folks.
I hope not, but usually there is some carryover.
Quiet New Year's?
It was. It was a quiet New Year's. New Year's Day was hopping. New Year's night, actually.
Football fans not having their teams win?
I guess. I'm not sure. There was a lot of people that were out causing some trouble and a lot of issues around the county.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tell us more, baby, after
We
find out why we say that. Are you ready?
Yes.
Lock, stock, and barrel. How did lock, stock, and barrel come to mean all or everything?
Tell me about it.
There are three parts to a gun.
Oh.
Okay.
Got it.
You ought to know this. The barrel, the stock, and the firing mechanisms.
That's true.
In the old days, the lock.
Okay.
By enumerating all three, the totality is reaffirmed.
Gotcha. Makes sense.
I know, and it went right over your head. That's
I
a little frightening.
So. Absolutely. It feels like a Monday.
Yeah, I know these split weeks do, don't they?
They sure do.
Yeah, so probably show up for work on Sunday.
I know.
I wonder where everybody is. Catch an attitude and then a little moment of realization.
Yep.
So what made yesterday so dynamic?
Well, New Year's Eve, we often refer to it as amateur hour, you know,
sure.
where people go out and do a bunch of crazy things and those kind of stuff. But as far as calls for service and or as far as arrests goes, I should say, you know, we did have a lot of calls for service. But as far as arrests, we only had 16 arrests throughout the county on New Year's Eve. And we had more arrests during the day of New Year's Eve than that
public
night,
drunkenness
so.
And that kind
yes,
of stuff.
Yes, exactly. So it's just, you know, nothing major, just the typical things you would have on any given night. But then New Year's Day, we had, you know, our coroner's office were busy responding to a lot of deaths. You know, Arcata had some overdose issues. We had deaths throughout the county and some suspicious deaths. And then we also had a SWAT call yesterday in Shelter Cove. A felony suspect was holed up in a house. We got some really good information. He was there. And it was in a location that was hard to get a perimeter around, but our patrol guys got there, got a perimeter, and called out the SWAT team. By the time our SWAT team got out there, set up, called everyone out, looks like the suspect had escaped before they were just as probably patrol was arriving on scene. So we had a busy day yesterday with a lot of resources out in Shelter Cove and trying to catch a bad guy.
So somebody's out there in the neighborhood.
Yeah, someone's in Southern Humboldt, you know, hiding out. So,
is Southern Humboldt the mecca of hiding out? I mean, it would seem to me like you wouldn't want to ever be at the end of the road because then there's only...
Yeah.
Granted, you can monitor who's coming in, but if you have to get out... There's only one way, and everybody knows that way.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there's several areas in rural Humboldt County that's serviced by one road, and that creates a lot of issues. Yes, and we talk about for fire danger and those kind of things too. But yes, in Southern Humboldt, Eastern Humboldt, rural Humboldt County, I mean, that's why the marijuana industry thrived for years is because there's a lot of places to hide, and so.
But they're not caves or anything like that.
No, there's not. But there's plenty of areas to run off in. There's a lot of forest land. There's a lot of open space. So people do have a lot of places to hide.
Why not employ? Why not have dogs? And just, I mean, as a routine, particularly for the guys and gals out in the rurals.
Yes.
You know, you just, okay, if you can't buy a cop, maybe you can buy a dog.
Yeah, absolutely.
And send the dog and... You know, dogs are, people react differently to dogs.
Yeah, that's good, Brian. It's exactly what we think. And so in the future, we have one canine right now that is assigned to a patrol deputy. The future is to have multiple canine patrol deputies work in rural Humboldt County. And that's, it's just a good rule, having a canine partner out there. And ideally we want, you know, one canine on every shift. So that's four canines that are out and about, that are able to respond to these type of incidents. And when a canine gets on scene where there's a subject that's holed up in a house or there's a search to be done, it is a game changer. that canine goes right to where that person's hiding. They're trained, and it all depends on the circumstances. They're trained to bark and hold. They're trained to bite and hold. It all depends on the level of resistance that the suspect offers. But it's a great tool to have, and it doesn't put deputy sheriffs in jeopardy knowing that, you know, a canine's going to be out there and won't get ambushed, you know, because a canine will get to that bad guy first.
Well, I would think there's a little bit more hesitation about shooting a dog also, which seems a little goofy.
Well, it's interesting because we have, you know, high-risk car stops and where we're drawing our firearms because there's a known violent threat in that vehicle, and we're pointing guns at the vehicle and ordering the person out, and the person doesn't want to respond. As soon as the canine gets on scene and starts barking, they don't hear the voice anymore. They hear the bark of the dog, and a lot of times the people give up at that point. They don't want to get bit. They're willing to look at down a barrel of a gun.
You take a shot, but not a bite.
But
yeah.
Not a bite. And so it's pretty interesting, and it's, you know, I'm excited, you know, in the future as our staffing gets a little bit better, that we do want to have to expand our canine programs and put those on shifts where they can roam pretty much throughout the county.
And I would suspect it's easier to get some community support funds.
It is.
Yeah, people buy a bag of food and drop it off at the office kind of thing.
It is, yeah. We raised several thousands of dollars when the idea of a canine came out and said, well, we need training. The canine costs a lot of money. It's about $10,000 to get a canine, get him trained.
Well, what does it cost to put somebody through POST or the academy?
Yes, exactly. It costs, you know, at least, you know, $20,000 in salary alone to put him through, and then it's another $5,000-$7,000 to put them through the academy. So it's very expensive to put, and there's no guarantees at that point either. And there's no guarantees with the dog too. So we've had to kind of shuffle around a canine. We got a couple years ago that did really good, but, you know, didn't last their shelf life. And then we had a current dog a dog last year or so that didn't work out, and so we got a new one, and this new one is doing great. So
dogs, is a personality the handler? The handler goes to another agency, and the doggy goes with them?
Sometimes that happens, but okay. The personality of the dog usually takes on the personality of the handler. But there are certain times when the dog just doesn't have what it takes, and so we have to recondition it.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and The Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:23. We're back talking shop this morning with Billy Hansel. With some of the artificial intelligence that's going on in research labs, and I'm sure out on Main Street, where does the dog fit in with that? I mean, it's certainly not artificial, and intelligence you could probably argue, but it's more than just a tool. Yeah, the dog brings in a different... to me, it's kind of like having horses, too. I mean, it just is different.
It's different. So we do see them as a tool, and because they have the ability and the senses that we just don't have. I mean, their nose for drug detection, for search, search and rescue.
40 times better sniffer than what we have.
Thousands of times.
Yeah.
I mean, it is amazing what they can do, and their tracking ability, and then the scent of you know, heroin, methamphetamine, marijuana, you know, transporting. It's all... you know, a game changer. So we were have them out there doing interdiction, and we're able to, you know, a simple traffic stop and then walking a dog around a vehicle. And if the dog alerts, we technically have that vehicle to search at that point in time.
So how does, is it all of a sudden stop?
It stops. Exactly.
I mean, smells?
Yeah. So it stops. It alerts, you know, there are passive alerts. Sometimes they scratch, sometimes they bark. It's all how they've been trained. And so once they alert, their canine says, yep, I got an alert on this back panel. Then at that point in time, you know, the car basically, you know, per the law, is able to be searched. So,
so why not already have a one to everybody?
Yeah, I know. There is an expense to it, and also, you know, there's custom vehicles. There's a lot of expense is the reason why.
Oh, you just don't put them in the back seat of a cruiser and say,
you
done?
You don't, because the thing is, it is also a commitment, too. So it's a commitment to 5 to 7 years for that dog. So we can't just simply change out handlers. So you are doing that job for 5 years. You have to have the right handler.
So the deputy...
The deputy is committed to this for 5 to 7 years, and, you know, we provide them a vehicle, so they take them the vehicle. We have to pay for their training every day, so they have to train every day. They have to feed them every day. We have to train and do this above and beyond their normal work schedule.
So the training's beyond 8 hours.
It is. So it is something that, you know, it's a financial commitment. It's also, we want to make sure that this is, you know, something that is provided to the right handler. So that not everyone can be a canine officer. It takes the right personality, the right balance of knowledge, proactiveness, and the right deputy to go out there and do this.
So if you've got a dog coming,
yes,
do you get the agreement before the dog is, you make the phone call to pick up a dog, say, okay, guys, who wants, or doggy's coming, and yeah, okay, we've got a little package showing up. Who wants?
Yeah, so what we do is we will identify the canine handler first. That would be the ideal thing. And then we notify the person that provides the canines to us that we have a new handler. We'd like to purchase an animal. They didn't put us on a schedule when their animals will be here. A lot of these animals come from Europe. They're specially trained in Europe. And they come here.
Why is that? Because military bases are there?
Yeah, they've Germany, Czechoslovakia, and some of those European states have been known as being the best breeders here, and they're not puppy mills, those kind of things. These are high quality and warranted animals, and with that, they come with a hefty price, but we haven't been disappointed with our current dog. It's everything we wanted, because we want also to be, you know, friendly, that we can take to schools and
the
fairs.
County fair,
and
those,
absolutely, and for them to be able to walk around, for kids to be able to touch the dog, interact with the dog, and then, but when it comes time to go and search, that it listens to its handler, and that is ideal, because there's times when you're gonna, you know, send the dog out because someone's running, and all of a sudden they give up. Their hands are up. At that point in time, the dog is supposed to, you know, stop and wait for their handler and just bark and hold and those kind of things. And it all plays on the aggressiveness of the suspect. And so it takes a special personality of both dog and handler to make sure the canine program works.
And then you tap in and monitor that it's working. I mean, how do you know that it is a good fit post-partnering?
Yeah, so we trust our canine handler to be able to tell us. We look at the training logs. We have our supervisors that keep track of those things. Every time there is an interaction, there's a report written. So we keep track of this, and to make sure that the canine and handler and everyone is doing everything that they need to do, because it is, you know, it is a big program here. We want to make sure it's successful, and we want to make sure it's being utilized. And so, and especially the handlers now, they know that if they can't they know that I want to expand the program, but if we can't do it right with one dog, then we're not going to do it with two dogs. So
right, yeah.
We want to make sure that you know, a lot of pressure is on that canine handler right now. He knows it, but he's definitely stepped up and has done a good job.
So ideally four?
Ideally four, yes. And my department would be very, very happy about that. There's a lot of people that want them, and but like I said, there's takes that certain personality. And so there is a
process. You've got more deputies wanting to be a canine.
We do.
Than
we
you
do.
Have dogs right now.
Yes. Yep.
What about at the airport? I mean, I know the TSA is there. You guys have got somebody there. Would that be a spot to have a dedicated dog?
You know, there's not a lot of activity at the airport, but you know, with TSA, Homeland Security, they do buy animals that are that they can be trained for, you know, bomb detection and those kind of things. So there are those opportunities.
Or the drugs going out. I mean,
yeah,
you know,
true.
I'm sure there's a fair amount that gets flown out.
Yep. So we do that. We do that with FedEx, UPS, United Parcel Service. You
but
know.
They have one dog, and all it does is, you know, visit the carrier.
Yeah,
so to speak.
Postal Service. Yep. Yeah. A lot of drugs get flown out of here for sure.
Yeah. What a shocker. But that would be one of the four?
That could be one of the four, yes. Yep.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
Locally owned businesses help our community maintain a distinct personality and to help increase tourism because we don't look like every other place. Small businesses also provide the ability to try on and try out items before you buy and get real expertise, saving you both time and money. When you shop, shop local.
Our award-winning camping department has the gear you need no matter what kind of camping you do. Come in and experience the many benefits of shopping with Pacific Outfitters.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Billy Hansel. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, Redeck, Humboldt Termite Pest Control. I guess best pest control.
Okay.
And Murphy's Markets. Couple things since last we got together. The public hearings associated with the wind turbine project.
Yes.
Overflow, emotion. Special location or what impressions did you have from the decorum side of the equation, not the content? Was it best case scenario? Could there have been some improvements?
So one thing I do appreciate is that the Board of Supervisors did take security precautions and invited us in the Sheriff's Office to look at the venue and provide security measures in place because we knew the volatileness of that whole hearing and, you know, some loose threats that were made, you know, regarding some of the actions of the Board of Supervisors if they go a certain way, think what things were going to happen and those kind of things. So we wanted to make sure there was definitely measures in place. And so I had a couple of my lieutenants put forward a security team. And I thought the security, as far as the facility goes, went phenomenal. They did an outstanding job. Lieutenant Mike Fridley and Lieutenant Sopawaga did a great job with our teams to make sure that there was a security plan in place. And that there were measures that if something did go wrong, something could happen. So we did offer up advice to the board as far as if there was any level of disruption. Now, in a public meeting, to weigh the constitutional rights of everyone there and their ability to speak is very, very important. But they have to have decorum, they have to have rules, and have to abide by those rules. One is the two-minute rule of you have your 2 minutes to speak, and then the mic is turned off, and it's the next person's to speak. And to not be disrupted by the audience and be booed, shouted down, you know, cursing from the audience, flipping people off, those kind of things. And that was occurring from time to time. And so there were warnings from Rex, who was the chairman, and he was chairing the meeting. And, you know, there was a balance there. But he had a script. If someone was disruptive to the point where they didn't heed the warning of silence, then the meeting could be shut down, and they could have had that person arrested for a misdemeanor of disrupting a public meeting and for us to escort them out and process them accordingly. We did not have that happen in that point.
Did it not get to that point, or did Rexy just not decide to cross the line?
Well, I think, you know, I think, again, they tried to balance it, and so it didn't get to the point where the Board of Supervisors or the panel or anyone else there thought that it crossed the line. And so at that point in time, since no one crossed their line, then it didn't get incorporated. So,
but there was intimidation, from what I understand, from a number of folks within the audience to other audience members, as well as, yes, some of those veiled threats.
Right.
You know, if somebody threats,
right,
game on.
Right.
That's it, and that's it. It's over.
Right.
You know, so I'm surprised that they were as laxed, particularly considering some of the other things we hear about in the hourly newscast about this going on or that going on, or, well, you know, they threatened three times and everybody just kind of dismissed it. And then the individual executes the plan and everybody's kind of stunned and amazed.
Right.
Somebody makes a threat against the Supes or an individual, I'm sorry, that's over.
Right.
You know, we'll shut this thing down right now, and by the way, you've now got an appointment for this afternoon starting immediately with local gendarme.
I mean, right.
I'm surprised, actually disappointed.
Yeah.
That if those were occurring, that they didn't take it more seriously.
Well, again, it's their meeting, and so they have to determine what crosses that line. So I can't be there, my guys can't be there to determine, you know, unless
sure.
there is an open threat where they see it when someone challenges someone to a fight or is physical, or there is an overt threat that we take as being imminent.
We will get you. Is that enough?
Well, not necessarily. You know, and so, but we were there. There wasn't anyone that approached us and said, "I want to press charges against that guy for threatening me." You know, and articulating the reasons why that threat was imminent.
Now, what about the crowd intimidation part? Because I know the bailiff has kind of been absorbed into your guys, and that's more that function rather than it is the law enforcement.
Right.
It just didn't rise to the level, or you guys didn't hear it?
Well,
or?
So again, we don't determine that. So it's unlike a courtroom where
you're
we
just
have
told
rules in place.
So
judges have standing orders in courtroom that people cannot talk out of turn. There's things that can't occur in a court, and our bailiffs have good direction from the judges that they don't need permission from the judge. If someone talks up from the audience, our bailiff has that ability to go up there and say, "That's a warning, another outburst, and you're going to be kicked out." So this is unlike that. You know, at a public meeting, the chair has that discretion, and there has, again, a script that we provide to them saying, "This is what you need to do." You know, you provide a warning, and then you advise them, "We'll shut down the meeting, and we're going to make arrests." But it's essentially a citizen's arrest from the chair, from the Board of Supervisors. He's going to arrest them. We're going to facilitate that arrest and bring them outside the venue.
Now, I'm sure you're as familiar with the phrase mob mentality.
For sure.
As anyone
yes.
is. Would you have preferred, I mean, I'm thinking, and you know, I'm sure everybody sighs relief that I'm not, but if I was in charge of that thing, okay, we're gonna have a room of 25. We'll have an ante room or an overflow room where the others can be and they can listen.
Mm-hmm.
We're only gonna have 25 at a time. We are not going to have mob mentality. We are not gonna have peer pressure. We're not gonna allow the ability for that to occur.
Mm-hmm.
One in, one out. Let's go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, again, it's not my meeting, so I can't make that determination, but...
But doesn't that kind of an approach drain that emotional swamp a little bit?
I don't know. Well, the thing is, they had that approach in the Planning Commission, right? There was a lot of people that were coming into the Planning Commission.
Right.
It was a one in, one out kind of thing because it was overflowed, and there was still intimidation. I believe, you know, one of the Planning Commissions changed their vote at the end because of the intimidation.
It's about three times too big for what I'm thinking, just to kind of keep it. So if somebody does get lippy, they're going to echo.
Right.
They're going to really stand out, and I think the accountability would tend to lessen the likelihood of it.
Right.
I guess might be the easiest way.
You know, and I think, you know, if this thing does occur in the future, I think there's going to be lessons learned, and, you know, maybe the rules will be, you know, better explained. And then, again, it takes one person to probably get ejected from the meeting for people to actually realize that there was a line and that person crossed it. And so we're not going to do that again.
Yeah. Oh, they are serious. Huh.
Right. Exactly.
KINS, News and Information Times, 8:43.
Are you a business owner looking for financial or technical assistance? An entrepreneur looking to start a new business? The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission and the Small Business Development Center want to help. With business loans, classes, and one-on-one consulting, our goal is your success. We've been helping Humboldt County businesses for over 30 years. Visit us at 520 E Street, Eureka, the Prosperity Center, or find us on the web. The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission and Small Business Development Center. We're here for you.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time, it's 8:48. We're back. Final couple minutes this morning with Humboldt County Sheriff Billy Hansel. Billy, Measure Z, XYZ, whatever it is.
Measure Z.
Is coming up halfway shortly, isn't it? The
yes.
Next round of applications?
Yeah, January is the time when applications get submitted to the county.
Yeah. Now, I know early on things like sidewalks were being talked about and some of these other non-sworn officer-related type
right?
Funding. Do those come out periodically, or is that every year those things kind of keep coming back and say, well, and it's really not boots on the ground,
right,
so to speak?
So where this, again, I want to remind everyone with Measure Z where this all started, and that was lack of public safety and lack of fire services and lack of funding for roads in the rural parts of the county. That was really the issues that brought Measure Z and Measure O, you know, to the forefront, and that's what people supported. And so these are public safety projects, and so deputies and fixing the roads and rural fire is really where the board should be focusing on.
Has that changed? Because, you know, any time goes by,
yeah,
memories start to fade,
sure,
things adjust.
This
is that still, I mean, that language hasn't changed in the...
It hasn't. The ballot language is still there. But when the community sees an opportunity to get funding from the county, you know, for their special programs, you know, like drug rehab, you know, for a sidewalk to be put in, a pathway to be put in, whatever it may be, you know, these are all great things that should be supported from someone else, you know. And so this is not something we should actually, you know, use Measure Z for. It should be for public safety, roads, and fire. And so all the police departments should get some, the fire department should get some, the road should benefit before we do these extra projects. That would be my goal.
Is there a concern that may not be the thought?
Yes, there's people that are out there, especially, you know, people on the committee and people in public that really want to see this spent otherwise.
Thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Brian.
Yeah, the wheel never stops turning. See everybody tomorrow.